You're listening to Zen Crossing, where spirituality meets everyday life, with your host, Koshin Chris Kane, abbot of the Puget Sound Zen Center.
Today we'll be talking about the teachings of Thich Nhat Hanh. Our guests are Dr. Peggy Rowe and Dr. Larry Ward. Peggy aspires to grow her heart as wide as the world. Her education is in counseling psychology and education. She is on the faculty of Atlantic University's MA in Mindful Leadership. She has been studying and traveling to support the teaching of Thich Nhat Hanh for 25 years. Peggy received the Dharma Lamp from her teacher in 2001, and Thich Nhat Hanh married Peggy and Larry in 1994. Larry received his PhD in religious studies with an emphasis in Buddhism in 2015. His research focused on meditation and neuroscience. Larry is also an ordained Christian minister and has celebrated more than 30 years of practice and teaching in that capacity. His belief is that the world needs more high-performing contemplatives, and his mission is to support this effort, whether it is teaching in a Zen center, Christian monastery, or Fortune 500 corporation. It's been very nice practicing with the two of you. Larry and Peggy moved to Vashon Island this fall and often drop in to practice with us, and I've really enjoyed talking shop with you as well. So it's always an honor to have you at the Zen Center, and I'm very happy to have you today. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Yeah. Larry, what first drew you to studying in the tradition of Thich Nhat Hanh?
A couple of things. One is that he had a relationship with Martin Luther King. Secondly, that his approach to Buddhism was grounded in his experience of the Vietnam War. So for me, that meant he did not treat the tradition as an abstraction, but a very practical, serious matter.
Yeah, it was really live for him. And Peggy, there are lots of different ways to practice and study Buddhism. What is it that most appeals to you about Thich Nhat Hanh's teaching?
What's helped me with Thich Nhat Hanh as my teacher is the focus on practice in daily life, and knowing that even washing the dishes or taking my dog for a walk, all of those are opportunities to practice mindfulness. And so it's been much more seamless for me to have an integrated practice in my life.
Yeah, cool. Sometimes Buddhism, I think, can be perceived as a passive practice where we sit still all the time. But in fact, Buddhist practice in many ways calls us into the world. I wonder if you can talk about Thich Nhat Hanh's teachings that call us to be engaged in the world.
The most important one of those for me is the first precept or mindfulness training in the order of interbeing. And the first three, really. But they all have to do with non-attachment to views. And the intention and aspiration of me not to get caught in fanaticism, extremism, and superiority. And within that is not to be attached not only to views in general in the world that's underneath our conflicts and wars, etc., but also not to be attached to Buddhist ones.
Yeah.
Because they too are not a means to fight about. They're a vehicle to take us somewhere in our spiritual quest. And that's been very clear from his teaching for me.
Yeah. Peggy, you want to add to that?
I started following the Vietnam War in third grade, and I kept a scrapbook. And in fourth grade, I noticed that there weren't the dead reported from Vietnam. And it haunted me really early on. So that was one of the ways I became connected very quickly with Thich Nhat Hanh. And he said when he first came to the United States, he's, oh, the peacemakers here are so angry. And I recognized myself as one of those angry peacemakers. And so his invitation was for me to become a peaceful peacemaker. And that was inspiring to me, to have a teacher who radiated peace, and I knew he'd held his dying family members, friends, and students, and that he could not live in his own country. So that invitation to be a peaceful peacemaker really called me, because I'd seen myself as a peacemaker since third grade, but yeah. I was an angry one when I first met him.
Yeah, the way we make peace makes all the difference, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You mentioned, Larry, the mindfulness trainings.
Mm-hmm.
At the Puget Sound Zen Center, when we just recently had four preceptors, the vows mm-hmm. that we take, we really based on the mindfulness trainings mm-hmm. because we liked them so much.
Mm.
We really liked the rhythm of it,
mm-hmm.
that noticing the suffering
yes.
in the world,
mm-hmm.
therefore
exactly.
I will,
mm-hmm.
right? Can you talk a little bit about those vows and what they've meant to you?
The way I would describe them is they're like a paint palette that I use to, with my own heart and mind, to create my own daily practice and my own way of engaging in contributing to a world that's more peaceful, that's more sustainable, and more just. And those trainings include that language of both peacefulness and justice and liberation, not separate from each other. And for me, that's really, really important, so that I am able to understand on a daily basis that what I do in my spiritual life is not disconnected from the world in which I live. In fact, it makes the world in which I live the way it is. And so, in some ways, if I want to change the world, I need to be engaged in changing my spiritual practice. And if I want to change my spiritual practice, I need to be engaged in changing the world. So it's not two different things.
No, those two things have to be
interconnected. Yeah.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about it until you just said it. But, of course, peace and justice can, in a way, be at odds, even though we often put them together. Justice is not always peaceful.
That's right.
Not always done with a peaceful heart.
That's right. And therefore, in my view, it's not justice.
Yeah.
It's something else.
Yeah. How about you, Peggy? You want to say anything about the precepts?
I really love the language, too. And our version is, aware of the suffering caused by, I am determined. And that determination and that awareness is what is helpful for me. So it's not saying this is right or this is wrong. What is in my awareness in relationship to this? And that's just kind of in me at this point, that ethical framework and that stability that gives me. I found a long time ago that vows gave me freedom. They didn't take it away. And I learned that in being married to Larry, too, that how much freedom we have to be ourselves with our commitment to our marriage. I feel the same way with the trainings.
Yeah,
I have a lot of freedom. Like the paint palette.
Yeah. I think that the Zen tradition talks at some length about that, about our idea of freedom.
Mm-hmm.
We may have the wrong idea of freedom if we just think that running around doing what we want is freedom.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
No, it's just running around doing what we want. We should call it something else.
Yeah. Just to finish that, by the way, for those who are listening who may not know the five mindfulness trainings, they are, I won't recite them all, but aware of the suffering caused by, for instance, violence, I vow to, or I, what was the word you
used? I am determined.
I am determined to not respect life,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
for instance.
Right.
Yeah, and that's the rhythm.
Mm-hmm. And that all of those details underlie the basic formula from Buddhism, which is aware of the suffering caused by my thinking, my speech, or my behavior. I am determined to. And then the five are just content in that methodology. But the awareness of the practice is how what I think, what I say, and what I do with my life, whether that creates suffering for myself and others, or whether that creates hope and justice and peace and sustainability for myself and others.
I think that's a really good point. And I think one thing I like about those mindfulness trainings is that it asks us to be aware of the results of our actions,
mm-hmm.
you know? And sometimes people think that it doesn't have to do with results, this practice perhaps, but it does. We need to pay attention to that. We need to.
And so the trainings for me are asking me to have the courage to be in touch with the results of my thinking, yeah, and my speech and my behavior.
Yeah, that does take courage.
It takes a lot of courage.
And honesty.
And honesty to be present to your own life and the world in which we're interconnected.
Speaking of the world, both of you teach all over the world, it seems like.
Mm-hmm.
I know you're not home all that often. And I know recently you felt an increase in the demand for your work as teachers. How are you finding that people are wanting to engage with Buddhist teachings right now, these days?
Well, I think there's a couple of factors. One of them is the language of mindfulness is permeating society.
It is.
It's moving into different disciplines in education, in business, in healthcare, of course, in wellness, where it really got its secular start. So there's that framework. But also, in addition to those wonderful things, there are people who are asking themselves about their own spiritual life.
Mm.
And more people are asking themselves as they look at society, they look at the trends, they look at what's happening with our children. When we look out and we see homeless people, I mean, when we see these things, those of us who are a little bit awake ask ourselves, how did this come to be? And for me, Buddhism is a wonderful spiritual tradition in helping us understand how things come to be and how they cannot come to be.
Good. I wonder if people are interested in learning more about Thich Nhat Hanh's teachings, where would you recommend they start?
It depends on their learning style. Mm. There's some books that are more analytical, like The Heart of the Buddha's Teaching. That's a really great one if that's your mind of learning. If the Old Path White Cloud, Tai's book on the life of the Buddha, is remarkable, but it's storytelling. The Miracle of Mindfulness was edited by an amazing poet named Jane Hirschfield. So that is one of my favorite books that really captures the poet that is Thich Nhat Hanh. You know, Thich Nhat Hanh was first and foremost a poet. And so it took an amazing poet to really edit his book and give his voice. So you really get his voice in The Miracle of Mindfulness with Jane Hirschfield's editing. And Old Path White Clouds, which he wrote, he describes himself writing that in the Upper Hamlet in France, toasting his hand on the radiator. I like to picture him toasting his hand. But it's a beautiful book of the life of the Buddha. You really pick up his love.
Yeah, that's full of stories.
Mm-hmm.
I have that book.
Mm-hmm.
And what's next for both of you in your practice and teaching?
Well, next week we head to Bangkok to lead a retreat for medical professionals on the science of compassion and the art of healing.
Hmm.
Then we return to Vashon, and then we go to Botswana.
In South Africa.
In South Africa to lead a retreat organized by one of our friends and mentees there, who's the MD in charge of the AIDS clinic, Women's AIDS Clinic in Botswana. Then we come back, and then we go back to Thailand for working with mindfulness and education at a school, international school.
International School Conference.
And then we go from there to Kyoto, where we'll have a weekend retreat and then a workshop with business people on taking mindfulness into the workplace.
And artists.
Artists.
I get to have a day with artists.
Separate day with artists.
Isn't that great? That's really taking Coles to Newcastle, isn't it? I mean, going back to Japan to teach him mindfulness.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. I love that we got that kind of boomerang.
Mm-hmm.
Happening. Well, you know, Quality Circles came over here.
Yeah, that's right.
Right? And transformed how we do business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So it's only fair.
Yeah. Peggy and Larry, thanks so much for coming in. I really appreciate it.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
Your company always. Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Crossing. For more information about the Puget Sound Zen Center, go to pszc.org.